This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
Yo koso. Haere mai. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Dunedin Otaru Sister City Society podcast. I'm your host today, Nathan Woodfield, a member of the Sister City Society. I'm here today for a third episode in the studios of Otago Access Radio, located in central Dunedin. In today's episode, I'm very excited to be joined by three guests, Bronwyn, who you may remember from the first episode, along with Harper and Idleweiss. Welcome. Yoroshiku onegaishimasu. Could I please ask each of you to briefly introduce yourself, and maybe I'll start with Bronwyn. Cheers.
Hajime mashite, kia ora. I'm Bronwyn. I'm the Japanese teacher up at Otago Girls High School, and I'm also the teacher that's in charge of the Amnesty International group at Otago Girls High School, and a society member.
Yes, many hats today. Yeah, that's really cool. And I understand you guys know each other as well. Harper and Idleweiss, I might ask to start with you.
Well, I am very grateful to be Ms. Thompson's Japanese student, as along with Idleweiss, and I'm one of the student coordinators for Amnesty at Otago Girls.
Wow, that's really, really an incredible role that you're doing at a young age too, to have that responsibility. So. Yeah, and so that was Harper and Idleweiss.
Yoroshiku. Yoroshiku. I'm Idleweiss. I also go to Otago Girls High School. I also take Japanese, and I am the secretary for Otago Girls' Amnesty Group.
Wow. It seems to me like there's almost an overlap between interest in doing Japanese and Amnesty International as well, so that's really cool. And as we'll look today, we'll certainly see that it's a topic, you know, there's a lot of topics in Japan and in Japanese that have a lot of overlap between these areas. So could you guys tell me a little bit about what is Amnesty International? I feel like I've seen the word a few times before, and I've seen the word in Japan as well when I was living there, but, you know, I can't say I've ever been involved in Amnesty International.
I might let one of the girls answer that because they're the ones that drive the group.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, Amnesty International is like an international organization that campaigns and fights for like activism and human rights and ensuring that everyone's treated fairly and equally.
That's really awesome. And great message that they've got there too. So do they have sort of groups for different ages? Because obviously, there's a high school group here, and are there a few different groups in Dunedin, maybe?
Mm. So we've been helping set other high schools up, along with, more importantly, the university group at Otago University. They're really great. But I think there's definitely options for – there's also another North Dunedin group, is there?
Mm.
And that's like a more like adult group, but like there's definitely options for everyone regardless of like what age group you're in.
That's really cool. And so what are some of the other schools in Dunedin that have started a Amnesty International group?
Well, very recently St Hilda's, Queens is about to start one up, so is Bayfield. Is there anyone else?
I think we're working on Otago Boys, but that's very definitely a work in progress.
Wow. So five of the high schools, and there's not that many high schools in Dunedin, so you're getting really good coverage there with that. So, and I hear it's quite an active group. Maybe Idleweiss, what do you sort of do with the group? You know, what do you guys meet up and talk about, or, you know, do you meet up on a regular basis with that?
Well, we have meetings every Friday,
yeah.
Friday lunchtime at school, and sometimes we just talk about human rights, sometimes we do like kahu quizzes, sometimes we do like special events, like did a fundraiser once, and we also participated in Youth Week.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. What did you fundraise for?
For what was it for?
We've done a few fundraisers. Yeah. Most recently, we did Relay for Life, which was really rewarding, and we've done Freedom Week in the past. Can you remember any others, Ms. Thompson?
We've also done some fundraisers to generate funds for the group to do other projects where we need to buy, like, art materials or so we can be self-sustaining.
So making some posters for some of these events, and oh, that'd be really cool to see. Maybe we can share a photo on the newsletter or something like that. And you talked about Freedom Week before. Can you tell me a little bit about Freedom Week?
So each year, Amnesty International holds a week called Freedom Week, and each year it has a theme. This year is about the Philippine state red tagging of young activists within the Philippines. And each year, Amnesty International challenges rangatahi to like hold events and fundraise and spread awareness about the theme of the year. Last year, it was about Ukraine. It's really fun. We get up to a lot of activities. We usually have about one activity a day.
Yeah. Wow. And so I think a lot of us might have heard about, you know, the war happening in Ukraine, but I haven't heard about what red tagging is. What does that term mean, red tagging?
So red tagging refers to the, well, in the context of the Philippines, refers to the, how do I put this? The Philippines government,
it's kind of like putting a red mark against someone's name because they've spoken out against the government, so that they're kind of on a watch list.
Right. So it's not, you know, it's not like they've tied a literal red ribbon around someone's wrist. It's
not
sort
not
of
a physical tag, no, but a metaphorical tag.
Yeah.
They're now on a watch list as being an activist or anti-government.
Yeah. And so they might get sort of legal harassment, being like, well, you've broken a made-up law or something, and we're going to arrest you so you don't talk out or do that again or else sort of, So it's sort of looking at some of the Freedom Week topic. It sounds like it's about sort of political freedoms for people, like I suppose it covers both, you know, free speech or, you know, free political views for people to have with oppression. And so do any topics relating to Japan or Japan at sort of a tangential level come up at all sometimes?
Well, last year, me and the other coordinator, we spoke at the Peace Pole Ceremony, which is not how this year may be, but is yearly held at the museum to commemorate the event of the Hiroshima bombs being dropped and Nagasaki. And so we do that, and we should probably do some more stuff about that in Amnesty. I think that'd be really great.
That's cool. So you mentioned there's a peace pole at the museum. Can you tell us what it looks like? So if we were to walk near Otago Museum, what are we looking out for there?
So right outside the museum, there's a very tall metal looking structure pointing out of the ground, and is there an inscription in it?
There is an inscription around the bottom, I think.
Yeah.
Cool. So it's sort of a symbolic gathering point for people, and I think it's really cool that Dunedin's actually got quite a lot of monuments or physical places pointing towards peace. The other one I think of is along George Street, for the conscientious objectors. I think it's got a specific name for the park, but it's sort of
Archibald Baxter,
right. And so he was quite a famous conscientious objector during First World War.
Yes.
That's also along the topic of peace, isn't it? Not wanting to have a needless war and not wanting to, you know, fight fellow man, which I imagine very much links up with Peace Pole. And maybe one other physical location I'd like to shout out is a tree that's been planted on the Market Reserve, which is a descendant tree from a tree that survived one of the atomic bomb blasts. So the seed from that tree has been planted here in Dunedin. So you can sort of see that tree as a physical marker to sort of reflect on the damage and dangers of nuclear weapons. And I suppose I'm talking personally here. It sort of also symbolizes a possibility of renewed life as well. You know, the tree survived and it's growing, and we can sort of look at that, grow and continue that call for peace so that tree doesn't see war again, as it were. Yeah. So that's really cool. So we'll just have a brief intermission here, and we'll start talking a little bit about a film that we have recently seen, recommended from episode one, called The Day the Sun Fell. Thanks so much. Welcome back to the Dunedin Otaru Sister City Society podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Woodfield, speaking from the studios of Otago Access Radio in Dunedin. I'm jojoined here today by Bronwyn, Harper, and Idleweiss. Thanks for listening. So we are reflecting on the fact that it's going to be the 80th anniversary of the atomic bombs being dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki this year. And there's quite a few, you know, media in terms of movies or TV series or books. And I just wanted to ask you guys, what are some of the ones that you guys have heard of or seen or read? And maybe I'll start with you, Idleweiss.
Well, I've seen Grave After Fireflies,
yes,
which is such a good film. I feel like all the films by Hayao Miyazaki have really good values behind them. Because he's an advocate for peace.
Yeah.
And Grave of the Fireflies shows the effects of war during World War II. And it shows how the Japanese civilians were affected by the bombs in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Yeah.
Yeah. And I watched the film quite a long time ago now, and it's a film that many people say they've often seen once, but it's hard to go back and watch again, because it's such an emotionally strong movie, and it's sort of following two children, is that right? And their experience.
It's about a brother and trying to take care of his younger sister, because both of his parents have died, and they try to survive alone during the war.
Yeah, and it's often, you know, people like that, the children that are just sort of forgotten about in situations like that, isn't it? There's no one to look after them. And I've read many stories about after the war how children were basically having to fend for themselves, living alone on the street. And obviously there's still some adults out there, but they're basically too busy trying to keep their own life together and survive to be able to help vulnerable people like children there. So yeah, very much worth a watch if you haven't seen it, but maybe not on a night where you've got other things to do, because it'll be really hard to do anything afterwards. Any other things you might have seen or heard of, Harper?
I haven't watched anything else, but Grave of the Fireflies is something I definitely watch, especially for maybe younger people who want to introduce to the ideas and effects of war without, you know, like the gruesome or like, yeah, I'd really recommend it. It is a really great movie, and everything Edelweiss said, it's like very true.
Yeah, because I suppose it's following it from a child's perspective as well, isn't it?
A very confused child who's like struggling to survive, but they're like being put into the parenthood of their younger sibling.
Yeah, yeah. Right, yeah, they're having to sort of grow up beyond, you know, before their time and take responsibilities that they shouldn't have to at such a young age. Bronwyn, you had another movie you recommended as well, which was animated.
In This Corner of the World, which is another movie by the same animator from Studio Ghibli.
Right.
And just gives another perspective of the survivors of Hiroshima, but in an accessible way, I think. It hasn't got quite that real life sort of, because it's animated, it's a gentler way of telling the story in a very powerful way.
Yeah. And so do you mind just saying that title again?
In This Corner of the World.
In This Corner of the World. And I tried to have a look online. It wasn't on Netflix when I checked, but it did seem like you could hire it through YouTube or a couple of platforms.
I think I found it on my Netflix. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I might have a bad account. I'll try again. Yeah. Okay. So it'll be well worth the watch too. And I checked out a review and it said it was quite a refreshing take on that situation.
I think it's maybe a slightly more hopeful spin on it. It's like coming out the other side and the regeneration that came afterwards.
Right. Yeah, yeah. And in a way, it's sort of a message that's very important now, isn't it?
Kind of giving the message we survived, but we don't want anyone else to have to survive and live through what we've lived through.
Yeah, yeah. Let this be the last time. Sort of maybe my thought with that tree, you know, that tree's parents have seen the war. Let this tree, as long as it lives, never see anything like that again. During episode one, we talked about sort of a documentary called The Day the Sun Fell. It's a 75-minute long film by a Japanese-Swiss filmmaker called Aya Doming. I do apologize if I don't have the right German there. And it was released in 2015. And my first thought was that, you know, it's such a beautifully shot film. And when I heard the title and when I watched it, it wasn't necessarily what I thought it was going to be just from the title alone. And it covered a wider range of topics and ideas, which I think the filmmaker, Aya, must have found herself too, because I think she started with a topic and the story evolved as she got to know people and talk to people and events that happened to occur in Japan while she was there as well. I wondered if you had any thoughts on the film
I think it's definitely worth people watching, because one of the things I enjoyed about it was that it gave lived experience.
Yes.
So within the film, she obviously reflected on her grandparents' experience during World War II and the bombing of Hiroshima, but she also met with people that had worked with her grandfather, and then she also met with people that had survived the tsunamis that caused the nuclear event in Fukushima.
Yes.
And just talking about different experiences around being exposed to nuclear energies and the impact that it can have on people.
Yeah. Because I think a lot of people, you know about what happened from sort of a simple couple sentence summary. But, you know, when you spend time and think about how it was experienced on the ground, it's, you know, really opens up the story. Like the grandmother of the filmmaker Kiyomi Doi sort of talked about, you know, she lived in the countryside out from Hiroshima, so she didn't see the blasts. They must have been far enough away. And today we, of course, have the internet, and you know, we expect 24-hour news from around the globe, but She sort of heard rumors about a bomb dropping, and she was like, well, that's an everyday event, you know, we're in war, a bomb drops, okay. And it sort of seemed like it took a couple of weeks before things started to really be like, oh, okay, this was something different. Yeah. This wasn't just, you know, a conventional weapon. Mm. This had much wider ramifications for world history, I suppose. Mm. And she talked about how her husband, who was a medical doctor, who went into the city after the blast, he returned home and didn't say a thing about it. So, you know, I think people in New Zealand too, when they talk with maybe veterans, they often don't hear those stories. Mm. And it sounds like Shigeru, the husband and the doctor there, he sort of lived the rest of his life without talking about the events of the war, sort of trying to forget and move on. And through the documentary, they managed to sort of piece together that story, as you're saying, through talking to people. And I also found it fascinating how he was a bit of a amateur poet. And he wrote so many poems that they shared during the film. And it sounds like he never showed them to anyone.
Yeah.
You know, his wife was sort of reading them in this beautiful Japanese cursive script. And it seemed to me like it was the first time she'd really read them herself. So it was bringing back memories of their life. And he was a bit of keen amateur photographer as well. So it got to really show scenes of post-war Japan and what happened in Hiroshima there. Yeah.
I think that's why the exhibition that we're hosting here in Dunedin soon is super important.
Yes.
Because what happened in Hiroshima, unless you visited the Peace Museum and seen firsthand some of the artifacts, it's really hard to fathom the magnitude and the long reach of the destruction. It wasn't just the instant destruction of buildings and loss of life that happened on the day. It's the intergenerational impact of the radiation that has occurred post the bombing.
Yeah, yes, because they interviewed a doctor that was still alive. Mm. You know, I think at the time of the film, he was about 90-something. Mm. He passed away at 100 a couple of years ago, but he talked about the fact that no one knew what radiation was. You know, you think, okay, there's been a bomb, it's safe to go in now, but the people that went into the blast site afterwards started to get sick and die, and no one knew why that was. People came up with theories like, oh, you know, maybe they ate something bad, or they, you know, got food poisoning or waterborne illnesses, but then so many people started coming down from that, and slowly sort of the truth came out and I suppose was discovered in terms of what that meant. So have you in some of your experiences met a person that's was on, you know, a survivor from this as well?
I remember when I was doing my undergraduate degree at Otago, we had a visiting group of hibakusha, which are atomic bomb survivors from Hiroshima and Nagasaki, came to share their experiences. And it was quite humbling listening to them sharing what they'd lived through, but also seeing the resilience and the hope they had for the future that it would never happen to any other city or any other country in the world, what had happened in Hiroshima. I guess what scares me is, you know, you watch the world today and you see what's happening on the news, and it feels like we're on the cusp of it happening again, and we haven't listened to those warnings or those stories, or the world leaders are not listening.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's where, you know, these girls in Amnesty have got such powerful voices of being able to speak up as young people and carry some of these peace messages forward in a different platform, as the hibakusha obviously are slowly, their numbers are declining because they are now in their 100th years.
Yeah.
It's, you know, groups like Amnesty that then now carry that peace message and the importance of not having senseless wars or using nuclear weapons on countries is, I think, now more than ever important.
Opening up to everyone here, what do you think some of the things are that cause people to sort of not think about the you know, the harmfulness of these things, or, you know, what causes them to sort of want to prioritize war making as opposed to having a peaceful relationship with their neighbors? I suppose that's sort of the crux, or always a philosophical thing, but I wonder if that was something that they sometimes thought about in Amnesty International at all or not. But I do apologize, it's quite a difficult question. Yeah.
Well, I do think that these people who prioritize war over peace, this is a very hard question.
Yeah.
They obviously do it for their own political gain, and they don't really care. Because it doesn't affect them, it affects their enemies. Like what happened during the World War when America bombed Hiroshima, it wasn't going to affect them. And it was their response towards what happened to Pearl Harbor. But they didn't keep in mind that they were bombing innocent civilians.
Yeah, yeah. And that's a really good point, isn't it? Because the powerful world leaders, they're safe. They're away from the front lines. Their children are safe. Their families are secure. You know, they've sort of got the money, wealth, and influence. And so it's the less powerful people, the people that might get conscripted or so forth, that sort of face the consequences that they don't have to face, where maybe they get more political power or territorial gains, I suppose. So that's part of what the Sister City movement actually started from, to try and address. The idea was that, you know, you can tell powerful world leaders, hey, try diplomacy, but they might be like, I'd rather have money, or I'd rather be powerful. So how can they make that more difficult? And by trying to have these grassroots movements where people view their faraway neighbors as real people, you know, deserving of shared humanity and love, people wouldn't want to go to war with it. I guess, you know, during wartime, like, you know, when I read history books, a big part of it is propaganda to try and make you see the enemy as something less than human. You know, whether it's drawing them as caricatures or sort of drawing them like animals, sort of thoughtless creatures. It's like, well, you know, when you kill them, it doesn't really count. They weren't really people. They were, you know, they'll come up with a name for different groups, you know, and they not a person, not a comrade, you know, whatever they want to say. Something that's, I think, important with the Sister City Society movements around the world as well, which is in addressing those sorts of questions there. So we'll just have another brief intermission there again, and we'll be right back with you. Thanks so much. Thanks so much for coming back. Welcome back to the Dunedin Otago Sister Society podcast. I'm your host, Nathan Woodfield, speaking from the studios of Otago Access Radio in Dunedin. So some heavy topics and big conversations today that we've had, and we'll go to some easier things, which is to talk about some of our upcoming events here in Dunedin. This is a recently announced event I'd first like to share with you, which is King's High School's Winter Market. So just like Dunedin has a sister city relationship with Otago City in Japan, many schools in Dunedin also have a sister school, or at least a high school has an annual or biennial school trip to Japan. So it's really great to support this. So King's High School will be hosting a winter market from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Sunday the 20th of July to fundraise for their upcoming Japan trip late this year. There'll be a bunch of winter-appropriate entertainment, entertainment and shopping, including hot food, mulled wine, winter clothes, and merinos, including socks, gloves, and scarves for sale. So it's a great course to support and help students see the world and learn from the experience. So that's again 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. on Sunday the 20th of July at King's High School. Next, we'd like to share about the Japanese speech competition that's coming up. And I understand some people in the audience might be entering that. Is that right?
Yeah. I entered it last year. I'll be entering it again.
Brilliant. Mm-hmm. Oh, it will be really cool to build on that experience and continue to, you know, develop that speech and public speaking skills as well, mm-hmm. just like you're doing here, really. So that's a really great experience. And now, when is the speech competition coming up?
It's on the 23rd of July, 5 p.m. on a Wednesday at Dunningham Suit City Public Library.
Perfect. And so we welcome an audience, and it's a great way to give everyone a warm welcome and support students as they develop their public speaking. We'll have a bit of food and drinks afterwards as well. So to enter, please contact your school's Japanese teacher, such as Bronwyn, or your language teacher. Alternatively, you can email Chris Baker at kbaker@tairi.scholl.nz. So it's kbaker@tairi.school.nz. We're looking forward to seeing you there, and to the students, all the best. Ganbatte ne. And following that, the event which we've been talking about throughout the show today is the 80th anniversary event. And I'll let you take that away.
So the opening ceremony for the ATS Memorial Photo Exhibition that's been shipped to us from the Peace Museum in Hiroshima, Japan, will be on the 2nd of August starting at 10 a.m. We've got Otaikawa coming to do a performance to get the energy flowing, and then we'll be welcomed by the mayor, and we also have some of guest speakers from Amnesty at Otago Girls will be speaking.
That's great.
We have some guest speakers from Otago Girls High School's sister school, Yasuda Girls High School, in Hiroshima, Japan, who are visiting us during that period. So some of their students will also speak at the opening. And then once the exhibition has been opened, there'll be an opportunity for the public to go and browse through the beautiful photo infographic posters. We'll also have a paper crane making area, so anyone that would like to write a message of peace on a piece of origami paper and then fold their own paper crane can do so. And then in September, Otago Girls Japanese senior students are travelling to Japan, so we will take the paper cranes that we've made at the exhibition and deliver them to the Peace Memorial in Hiroshima on behalf of the city.
That's incredible. And thanks so much for making that happen. It's really amazing that we can take part in something that will be happening 10,000 kilometres away as well. And if we watch the you know, the event on TV, maybe we'll be like, oh, that's my paper crane right there. Yeah. So thanks so much for joining me on the show today. I'm really looking forward to seeing you all at the speech competition and at the Hiroshima and Nagasaki 80th anniversary exhibit coming up. To follow the society and hear about our upcoming events, You can follow us on Facebook if you search for the Dunedin Otaru Sister City Society. That's Otaru spelt O-T-A-R-U. We also have an email newsletter that you can sign up to. You can message a page on Facebook or email me directly at dunedinotarupodcast@gmail.com to sign up. And Harpen Idlewise, could you remind me where we can follow your Amnesty International group?
Well, I have it written down right here. Shout out to my social media manager, Phoebe Ashtown. She's curated a lovely page for us. So informative, and I would definitely recommend that you all go check it out. And it's amnesty.otagogirls on Instagram and Facebook.
Brilliant.
And please do go follow the girls because their Insta feed is next level cool.
Wow.
And their newsletter that they produce, they've got their own newspaper that they publish via their Instagram feed with some really, really insightful articles written by young minds.
Wow. Such talented people here in Dunedin, isn't it? And so well done, both of you. So really appreciate that. Finally, this show is played on Otago Access Radio in Dunedin on the airwaves of 105.4 FM and 1575 AM. And it's also on their website, oar.org.nz. You can also listen to us online through your favourite podcast app, including Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Just search for Dunedin Otaru Sister City Society Podcast. That's Otaru spelt O-T-A-R-U. Thanks so much for listening and joining us today. O kiki itadaki, arigatou gozaimashita. Till next time.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.